you.
Thank you, Merrill. As you said, I'm Hugh Savoy, a soil fertility specialist with the University of Tennessee. I'm based in Knoxville. Tim Carter was my graduate student, finished this spring, working with private industry now. Brian Leib is our irrigation specialist there in the Department of Biosystems Engineering and Soil Science. Vaughn's Bermuda grass is what we work with. It's a hybrid warm season grass in Tennessee. Our forage specialist tells me we have currently about 7,000 hectare. It has become a lot more popular forage, especially with the horse people. Responds highly to nitrogen fertilization, as we know, great drought resistance. It fills that gap when our cool season forages go out there in the heat of the summer, and that's the advantage of it. It can fill that summer gap. What got us started with Bermuda grass? I guess I always had an interest in it, being from the deep south, Louisiana. Did my work at LSU with Don Robinson, and he had a lot of work. That's probably where our nitrogen recommendations came from, is out of some of that work, early work with Coastal. Got to Tennessee and got to looking around at the source of our fertilizer recommendations, and as many of you know, oftentimes that's difficult to trace. These things weren't always published. Even if there was a state study, it may have stayed in the file of someone when they left, and you don't have that. So as near as we can tell, our current recommendations, 112 kilograms of N per hectare, apply that green up, and then after each harvest, up to four harvests for hybrid, originated from early work with Coastal. And a little bit further south than we are, Bermuda grass is somewhat a new experience in Tennessee with the development of some of the more cold-resistant varieties like Tifton 44, and then more recently, this Bonds is a selection out of the Sequatchie Valley there in Tennessee by a local farmer. Probably came out of something he had from Coastal or Tifton. A couple other reasons brought us to this. We had a lot of problems with farmers, particularly in K management of this grass, so we wanted to work with it. Had a good, Mr. Vaughn donated some. We got it established there at the Highland Rim in Middle Tennessee. And then the forage lab continually saw high levels of nitrate in this forage as they were doing samples every summer. So we began to wonder, are we putting too much nitrogen on it? And about that time, our Department of Ag came up with some money for us to do some fertilizer verification work of our calibration. And I said, sure, give it to us, we'll do it. We've got the grass already going. So that's how this work came about. Our objectives then were to evaluate Vaughn's hybrid Bermuda grass yield response to irrigation. Brian Leib got on board and had an interest in irrigation. He already had some work going and rate of nitrogen application, and to look at tissue nitrate accumulations in Vaughn's hybrid. And materials and methods. We had a Kreider silt loam, a fairly deep soil there at Highland Rim, a split plot Latin square design, irrigated and non-irrigated were our main plot treatments. Then we had five nitrogen rates ranging from 0 to 224 kilograms of N per hectare. And as I said, the 112 kilogram per hectare is our current recommendation, and it's still currently recommended at green up and again after each harvest up to four harvests. And we had five replications of that study. The irrigated plots received at least 2.5 centimeters of water per acre per week by rainfall or irrigation if there was a deficit. Nitrogen applications were applied at green up again, and for us that's right about the 1st of May. And occasionally we would get the end on either that the end of that last week of April or the first week of May, consistently every year. and then they were made up to four times per season. I think there was one year where we didn't do the last application. Plot size was 3 by 6 meters, and a 1 by 6 meter area was harvested using a Carter automated harvester. Each plot was harvested once in June, July, August, and September. Dry matter was determined, and then from that sample, we also got elemental content and nitrate in values. A little bit closer look, there's the Brad on the Carter harvester, let's see, where's that at? So this would be the, this was an irrigated plot here and a non-irrigated plot. And again, he would cut the 1 by 6 meter swath right out of that. We'd take a grab sample for dry matter and elemental analysis, and that's pretty much how that really smooth process. I was used to the old hand mowers there when I worked in Mississippi, and this is heaven compared to hand mowing and weighing. And we had approximately 30-day harvest intervals. Again, over this three-year period, we didn't see a response to irrigation at this site. That doesn't mean Bermuda grass is not responsive. Brian had another site on the same station, further on a different soil, a little drouter, and we did see an irrigation response. But on this site, during this three-year period, irrigation was not a factor. Nitrogen application, harvest month, and then there was an interaction between nitrogen application and harvest month. Normally, or in the past, I've seen in application rates for forages and multiple harvests pretty much total. You total the yield for the year and you analyze that. We took a little bit different approach since there was a harvest month interaction and looking at the whole thing and breaking out harvest month. And when we did that, what we saw was that in this summer period, we had a higher level of yield at each harvest date on average. And also the break point, if you look at this on both the July and the August, the break point here is pretty much at our current recommendation. Whereas for the June and September harvests, we see a break point of the 56 kilograms. Now this, we had some early work. I didn't mention Reed Cripps did a little bit of work in the Sequatchie Valley, a little bit cooler region, and oftentimes he only got a response, yield response to this 56 kilograms of N per hectare per harvest. And that was another reason for our study, to see what was going on there. Basically, this makes sense in that our springs or our May period, when this forage is, from this harvest date is growing, is generally a very cool period. It can be variable from year to year, but very consistently we have very cool night temperatures especially. So even though we have the water and the fertilizer, we may not have the temperature component or the heat units that the Bermuda grass needs, and there, this is why we might be seeing this lower yield during this period of time. This is kind of opposite to what we've always told farmers and to what farmers do, because oftentimes farmers will put their biggest slug of nitrogen up front feeling they've got the water there early in the year. Let's get the nitrogen on while it's there. But this is telling me that no, maybe that's not right for Tennessee. It may be right further south where they have the heat units. But going to the site-specific theme of this session, for this area of Middle Tennessee, it may be best to hold back a little bit on your end rate early on and then give it that slug in June after that first harvest, where we do see some good potential for some good high yields. I had a little bit harder trouble explaining this late September thing, but there is something in the literature that indicates out of Georgia that the Bermuda grass tends after summer solstice to begin to focus emphasis on putting nutrients and carbohydrates into the roots in preparation for winter dormancy. So that may be what's happening there. The effect doesn't seem quite as magnified as in the spring, but you do have lower yields. And that didn't make sense in terms of temperatures. We still have pretty hot temperatures in August when that forage is growing. Water is usually our limitation in August. Nitrogen application response then was not seen past the 56 kilograms of N per hectare in the June and September harvest dates, but the summer harvest dates did respond up to our current recommendation of 112. How do we interpret this? Well, if you ask any two soil fertility specialists how to interpret this, you'd probably get two different answers. I tend to like a linear plateau type model approach and fitting data to that. It gives usually a pretty good fit compared to any other model, and the interpretation in my mind is very practical, where that linear range stops, assuming commodity prices and fertilizer prices are in the good ranges. That's going to be your maximum yield and your most profitable yield as well. Now, it may back down if fertilizer prices get too high, but usually in that linear range, you're profitable and you're maximizing. So that's what we did. This is just a glimpse of that data I just showed you, plotted out with connecting the dots. That these are the summer harvests up here. Oops, lost my pointer. And the spring and the fall harvests. You see the interaction's not great, but you can see the difference in the magnitude of the yield, and really suggesting different breakpoints there as well. And Tim fit that to a linear plateau model, looking at the different harvest dates separately and then combining the 3 years. And these are the breakpoints that he found. I guess most importantly here, again, you see this summer higher yield required a somewhat higher amount of nitrogen, approaching what we currently recommend, but linear plateau also gives a fairly conservative estimate of nitrogen needed compared to some models, and you can see that kind of backs it off. I guess in my mind, in trying to interpret that data, I also have to ask, well, what's happening with nitrate in? And of course, that's the other thing we looked at. I don't know that that we totally solved that. That's sort of a kind of like how much nitrogen do we need question. Well, it's a changing scenario from year to year. But generally what we see here is that, yes, we do need a little more nitrogen in the summer than in the spring and the fall, although those are not terribly different. This is the whole model fitted over the whole 3 years. Again, we didn't look at relative yield. We looked at actual yield values. That's why that R square is fairly small. However, it is significant. And that's pretty much what you see. When he tried to break out the main factors that were involved, that in rate should be first. That was the most important. I put that out of order. Oops, I put that out of order. I keep losing my pointer. Also, rainfall and tissue in, as you might expect. But in rate was a big factor. We tried to plot that out by year and harvest date. These are 2008 nitrate in levels in plant tissue. At each treatment level of N. Again, you can see at the highest rates in 2008 is where we saw the high nitrate N problem. 5,000 milligrams per kilogram of a nitrate N there is the bottom end of that range where the animal people tell us the toxicity problems start. Generally, the most susceptible animals, the young animals or the pregnant animals, are the ones that are affected at this lower end of the range, and then as it gets higher, more healthier animals are affected. But we are getting into that range, especially at the higher rates of application for harvest 8 and 08. Again, in 09, even the lowest end rates right there at the point of the beginning of that range. But all of our higher rates, even the currently recommended rate, there in these first two harvest dates, were in that range. We lost some tissue samples at the end of the year, unfortunately, and didn't get a measure there. In 2010, again, we see these high levels are in the toxic range, and the 56 kilogram one is okay. I had Tim just plot out the individual data plots, and I think that's probably the most revealing. If you just plot the individual plots over the 3 years, you get something that looks like this, and you can see only the lowest rate of N didn't have a real high frequency, if at all. These are probably flukes of nitrate N. When you're at what we currently recommend, there is a much higher frequency of nitrate N being in that toxic range. I guess the question in my mind, and that's perhaps not answered, is if we do what the mixed model analysis of variance tells us and back off from this into this range here, are we going to have consistently lower nitrate N values? And I guess that's where if we had a resources where we could have broken this scale down a little finer and had more treatments, we might have could have answered that, or we could go back and maybe do that. So in summary, we had no overall yield response to irrigation in the 3 years of this study. A significant interaction was seen between harvest month and nitrogen rate. Hay yield response to nitrogen rate was significant. It was maximized at a lower rate in the June and September harvests than what we saw in the summer harvest. Savings of up to 112 kilograms of N relative to our current rates could be realized annually if you adjusted N rate applied for time of year. Now, one downside to this that I didn't mention as I talked about the data was, unfortunately, in those 56 kilogram of N per hectare plots, many times we come into what I call the green factor. Everyone likes to see nice dark green plants, and those plots compared to the 112 were not always what a farmer would come out and want to see in his field. They would have some tinge of yellow, some chlorosis looking compared to the 112. So how do you sell a farmer that yes, you're still getting the yield? I didn't show protein content. Protein content was not different. You're still getting good protein and good yield. You just have a little lighter yellow plant there. And that often is a hard sell working in extension. They want something that looks a nice dark green color. They equate that with production. A linear plot-till model appeared to fit the data well for determination of an appropriate N rate. The potential for high nitrate N in forage appears to increase with N rate applied. And that's all I have. Do I need to?
Okay. Do I have time for one quick question? There is one? If not, give you a hand.
Thank you.